Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donnelly view system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Video podcasting to you from a field here in beautiful rural Ireland. I'm Trav Denny, and this is Malby on the Spot, which is your weekly chance, thanks to Anfield Index Pro, to hear the wit and wisdom of Liverpool and Denmark legend Jan Malby as we talk about all things Liverpool Football Club. I said I wouldn't say that, and I'm after saying it again. There we go. Habit is a habit, Jan, and we'll keep with the one that we always keep with. Good evening, Jan.
Yes, good evening, Trav. I hope you're well.
I'm good, man. I am good. And of course, we're all breathing a bit easier. We're all feeling a little bit happier in our in ourselves after the win last night. It's probably exactly where we should go to start talking, because it was a remarkable kind of an outing for the Reds. A lot riding on it. I don't know how you feel, but in my mind, if it had been a defeat, season's looking very ropey all of a sudden, and I've invested a lot personally in the Champions League being our way of rescuing it. So it was a very, very important win more than anything else. Before we get into any details of the match or the individuals, the significance of that, did you get the feeling, here's the question directly, did you get the feeling it's another false dawn, or are you happy that we may be back onto something?
Well, I guess if you call any win, you know, a dawn, whether it's a false one or not. I mean, I thought the 9-0 against Bournemouth is different, isn't it? Because in that moment you think, hey, there's nothing wrong here, is there? But I think if you watch the way that we played, it's a step in the right direction. I think for the first time for quite a while, you could see, I think, that Klopp had discussed with the players how he wants them to play. You know, this thing about, maybe not so much about reinventing themselves, but more about going back to basic. It looked like he'd had a word with them how we're going to approach that. And the big thing for me was this thing about being compact, you know, being more together, being well aware that, I mean, Ajax are not world beaters, but they are quite capable of playing through the lines and playing in small areas, tight areas. And I think Klopp had made that aware to the players, isn't it? So they were very aware, and we very rarely lost our concentration or our shape. I found it really difficult to create many chances. Obviously, they scored the goal, and Daley Blind had a header in the second half. Beyond that, they don't create an awful lot. But I've got a feeling that Virgil van Dijk came out and said that, you know, a lot of ex-players are talking about Liverpool, and they should know, because we've all been through what they're going through at the moment, and we have. We've all been there where you can't quite put your finger on it. From a personal point of view, you always think, why can't I do what I normally do, and how long will this last? And that's where they're at now, isn't it? But in the end, we got a goal, which I thought was just about this. I think we found it a little bit difficult, more difficult than we maybe anticipated. Great chances. So it's no surprise it came by our set piece, because we were dominant from set piece, especially in their penalty area.
Yeah, absolutely fair. And I completely get the reluctance to maybe hop on any train and say, well, everything's back on track now. I think that would be a silly thing to do. Probably the easiest jumping off point for us is to start in your neck of the woods, which is midfield, because it's no coincidence, really, that we have our maestro back in the team and things are starting to look a lot more coherent. Some of the shortcomings that people were seeing and perhaps being excessively harsh towards Harvey Elliott about in relation to his defensive work, that type of thing was to an extent covered for by the presence of Thiago in midfield, with Fabinho doing his thing as well. So there was a better platform for us immediately. Now, I watched a clip, a sequence of video clips of Thiago's touches. I mean, Jan, it was a real masterclass of performance, and it may not have appeared that way at the start or even during the game. You could see he was playing well. But when you actually look at the quality of these passes, man, when you look at the quality of this real Thiago trademark of taking the ball close to an opposition player and then simply turning away, it looks simple. It's the least simple thing in the world. He's massive for us. He's kind of too massive for us, isn't he? Because we don't have him. We're just not the same team.
Yeah, and that's the problem, isn't it? Because you do get the feeling that there's going to be spells again this season where we're going to be without him. There's still people that are trying to come to terms with what he brings to the team in terms of, you know, he isn't an assist maker and he isn't a goal scorer. He's more of a rhythm man, isn't he? You know, he brings rhythm to the way that we play, which then allows other people to do what they do, which is assist and score goals. And I still think we're away from that, but you have to start somewhere, isn't it? And it's always good to get control. I mean, I've looked at the Napoli game again, and it's a game that any pro footballer would have hated to play in, because there's no control. You don't know where your teammates are. You have an expectation of where your teammates should be, but they weren't, and it was very uncomfortable to play football in that. But I think with Thiago, we managed to get control. I thought we had control for almost all of the game. And we also managed to get some kind of rhythm, although there is aspects of our game that is still nowhere near the standards and the levels that they've set themselves. You know, we're not talking these players up to be something they're not. They've done it themselves, haven't they? They've produced over the years, and we've gone, well, this is a level we expect from your boys, isn't it? Because we want to talk about our football club as one of the top 2, 3, 4 in the world. And that's what's required, isn't it? So we're still a way away from that. But having Thiago back is massive. And this thing you have about, you know, getting close to opposition, knowing how to turn out of trouble, isn't it? And always finding the right solution. It's a skill. There's a lot of things to do with football, and most things you can teach people somewhere. And then there's just things you're born with, aren't you? And his ability with almost eyes in the back of his head is something he's born with, that ability. And it goes the same with goal scorers and whatever else, isn't it? It's just a rare, rare trend, because you don't see it in many.
It is a rare thing, and it's worth maybe dwelling on for a minute, because it's part of what makes him special. Yes, he can whip those passes, and he has a very distinctive style when he's doing that, and sort of a classiness about him as he strokes those passes. But what you don't, what most people don't have is that happiness to take the ball in tight situations and then do something with it. So, again, just because we have you and we can talk to you about it, I'm trying to get maybe from you, that's a thing that I always remember about how you would play. It didn't matter to you how close opposition players were. You were happy to take the ball in and then recycle it or pass it forward or whatever. But it's not everyone that's happy to do that. And even from my own limited sort of playing and coaching, more actually, the kid, when you have a team and you've got a kid who's willing to take the ball in a congested area, that's the kid who has a chance of making it. That's the kid who's a chance of being a cut above everybody else. What does that come down to, Jan? Is it just confidence? I mean, you talk about goal scorers of a certain thing. Is it an instinct? To me, you have to have a level of confidence perhaps there that other players don't have in your ability to do that.
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of what you just mentioned, isn't it? I mean, obviously it starts with ability and then you've got to have that belief to want to do it. I mean, you see more and more footballers in the professional game who are prepared to take a pass under pressure. But more often than not, they'll just give it straight back with a one touch, like a wall pass, isn't it? Bang in and out, isn't it? It's not that we're talking about. We're talking about the guy who takes the ball in. Talking about the guy who takes the ball in, and then allows even more opposition players to get even closer before he turns away from trouble and then goes, here you are, Trent. The picture's in my head. Another two passes and we're in the penalty box. And that's what Thiago does, isn't it? You know, he weighs up the situation while he's got the ball, while the opposition is closing in on, and he's going, I'm going to give this ball now to one of my teammates who then, if he's good enough or he sees it, is one or two passes away from us being able to do something. And that's the big thing, isn't it? He's like the pre-pass. And for some people, it's not quite enough, but it is so important. It's the same equivalent of the importance of the teams who insist on playing out from the back, isn't it? And why do you do that? Because we want to get into certain situations. And it's the same thing that why is it important that we have a player that takes the ball under pressure? Because we want to create some situations. We know exactly what those are. Hence the reason when Barcelona came with that style, with Xavi and Iniesta and whatever, they blew the opposition away, didn't they? Because nobody else played like that at that time. And it's a very powerful thing, isn't it? But I guess, I mean, I've never been a goal scorer, so I don't quite know what it requires to be in there and score all those goals. But I do know what it requires to be in midfield and taking on that responsibility, isn't it? And I guess a bit like myself, Thiago, I think he enjoys it. It's a bit like a goal scorer enjoying scoring goals, isn't it? I think you get the same, you know, when they give it to you in a really tight spot and you can hear the crowd, can't you? You know, I always used to laugh when the crowd shouted, man on! And I'm kind of tempted to say, I know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he's exactly where I want him to be. If I can just get him a little bit closer, it would be even better, you know. And that's without sounding big-headed, isn't it, Trevor? You know what I mean? But it is almost like that, isn't it? Man on, yeah, don't worry about it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. That's the point, lads. I know the man is on. Exactly. And you know, that phrase you use there, I've heard it from Peter Beardsley, Kenny Dalglish, and it might have been either, I don't think I've interviewed Graeme Souness, it was somebody else. It could have been Johnny Barnes, that picture of, that phrase of having a picture in your head. I've always loved that phrase because it really does speak to a sort of a football game intelligence where you're not, it's like people say about chess players, you're not just playing in the now, you're trying to think two passes ahead or at least one pass ahead, and that's what makes all the difference. You're so right about that. It really is an interesting aspect to it. Now, on the flip side of Thiago, I want to hop this story off you because that's if I can find the bloody thing now. I want to hop it off you because I it doesn't sit right with me, and I think it sounds like some sort of clickbait, basically. It's a lot of stories coming in now about our late signing that we drafted in, Arthur Melo. A lot of stories doing the rounds, especially in foreign press, it would seem. I don't trust most outlets, so whether this is a particularly bad one or not, but certainly in Tutto Mercato Web, apparently the claim is being made that Klopp and his coaches are very underwhelmed by what they've seen in training from Arthur Melo. Now, that to me has a sort of a whiff of bullshit off it, Jan. Purely for the reason that I would imagine he was always somewhere on our list if he's one of the people that we decided to take or someone we had been looking at who ticks a number of boxes. So when that poor kid came on to make his debut in an absolute shit show of performance, I felt sorry for him and he didn't do well. He looked a bit lost, but that's a horrible scenario to be coming into. So I think people are putting two and two together and getting 17 here, because we hear very positive things being said by people like Alisson and other Brazilians talking highly about him. So, I mean, to me, that doesn't sound right at all. That it sounds like one of those stories that people are making up, like they're making up stories about Darwin Nunes. What would be your take on that, like as a potential that, oh, all of a sudden the coaches and Klopp are thinking this lad isn't what we want? Could that really even happen at this stage in the game? I mean, you used to talk about how you'd sign a fella. Fellas were signed maybe based on one or two scouting things or whatever, and they'd come, and then maybe they would stink the place out if they weren't up to the job. But the research of players now is so complete. It seems unbelievable to me. What do you think?
I think the most unbelievable is that if things like that gets out, I mean, who leads that? If Klopp and his coaching staff is underwhelmed, who do they talk to that about, apart from themselves? And how would that get out? You know, I'm fortunate enough that I work on most Liverpool games, home and away, and I know how difficult it can be to get information. And if you're ever lucky enough to get any kind of information, it's always, you know, keep it under your hat, you know what I mean? Use it as something you might know without actually saying what you know, isn't it? So I know how difficult right. it is. So I would find that, I would just find that bizarre. I would be find that bizarre if there was a leak from the coaching staff or whoever else might know. It might have been somebody who might have seen it, or maybe even just based on his little bit of a performance in Napoli, which would be grossly unfair. But I do think that Klopp would have expected something like the condition he's generally in, the boy, isn't it? You know, because he hasn't played a lot of football. And Klopp would have thought, well, okay, yeah, the first thing we need to do is get him up to speed physically, isn't it? And by that, I mean getting ready to play at the tempo that we play. I think Klopp would have fully expected that. The only problem for Arthur now is that we're obviously getting midfield players back, so it won't make it any easier for him to get a bit of a run out. But it will enable us to have a look at him to see whether it's something we want to pursue.
Now, I kind of flagged up Darwin Nunes there because he's been at the centre of an awful lot of nonsense talk today as well, Jan. I'd call it nonsense talk. Maybe I'm being unfair. Maybe people have a point. But I don't think there's a sample size worth a damn yet to even begin to assess a player on. That would be my humble opinion. And so when I see people writing him off, I find that kind of laughable. Because, again, for the same reason, the extent of the research that Liverpool have done on this guy before committing such a large amount of money would mean that he's a wonderful footballer. As pointed out on other podcasts on Anfield Index by other podcasters, Brighton did the same and were very, very anxious to take him at one point. And they are a very, very statistics and analytics based club in terms of the recruitment as well. So the idea that he's a duffer that we've signed to me is daft. However, it is fair to say that, you know, as you were watching him last night when he came on, it's not that he looked lumbering or anything like that or immobile. He looked a little bit skittish, a little bit out of control, a little bit, certainly his first few touches and passes and attempts to control the ball and runs seemed awkward. Maybe a fella who was doing that trying too hard thing, that's a bit of a cliche, but you know what I mean. But I thought he played his way into the game and I was pretty impressed with the way it finished out for him. He almost put one on the plate for Luis Diaz. It was just a touch from the keeper that stopped that. And he could have had a goal himself. He was heavily criticised for missing that opportunity, that lovely flowing move where the final pass comes from Mo Salah to him and he has to help it on and he kind of pulls it wide. You know, I think that might be a bit harsh to judge him on that as well. Liverpool forwards are not exactly finding the net with great regularity. So to pick one lad out seems a bit harsh. A long-winded way of putting it to you that I'm wondering, when do you think we might start to see the Darwin Nunes that Jurgen Klopp wants? And do you wonder or worry, more to the point, that incorporating him into the team and into the side and the way we play may actually may actually be a real sort of teething process where we have a few growing pains to endure before it clicks. What do you reckon?
Well, I do think that it might take a bit of time, but I'm not overly concerned. And when I'm talking about when will we see the best of him, I don't know. But three things that immediately spring to mind, isn't it? He wants to run away from the ball, so he wants to stretch the play. That, in my book, is a good sign. He wants to be in the penalty area where he can score goals. He's got a real hunger to attack that near post, hasn't he? That's kind of his area. That's his DNA, isn't it? I attack the near post, isn't it? And also, the physical side of the English Premier League won't cause him any problems. You know, so I look at it like this, Trevor, that he comes across and he costs 64 million with all sorts of add-ons. Well, that in itself for a 22-year-old boy is a big price tag. But he hits the ground running, doesn't he? The first two times we see him, we can't quite believe it, can we? Manchester City, in the Community Shield, everybody went, yes, I'm having him all day. He then comes on as a substitute against Fulham, and he has an unbelievable impact. Unbelievable impact at Fulham. Have a look at that again. I mean, he could have scored 3 goals and 2 assists himself. Unbelievably impact, isn't it? And then it starts to go wrong. The next game is then Crystal Palace, where he gets sent off. And then all of a sudden, he starts to doubt himself. He doubts his own temperament. He doubts his own ability. And then allows people to jump on his back. And then, of course, because we've got no players, we're now playing 3 games without him. It's not always suspensions are that expensive, is it? You know, sometimes you kind of get away with it and he's out for a couple of games. But this was really expensive for us, wasn't it? Because we didn't have anyone else. And then he's got to try and get back into a team that's not playing well, you know. So all them things all of a sudden goes against him, isn't it? And now Jurgen Klopp is thinking. Last night, Jurgen Klopp had one thought in his mind. And that is that our defensive work from the front, we've got to get that working again. And who does that the best? Schotter. And that's why Schotter plays last night. Because he can start that, give sickness to the midfield and then follow. Because if you look at the other two that play in our front two, Mo Salah's Mo Salah, isn't it? And he kind of does what he does. He's not one of those reliable ones in the press, is he? You know, he brings something else. And you've got Luis Diaz, who's still very much an individual, isn't he? You know, so he had to put Schotter in to try and get that right, isn't he? So David Nunes misses out and then everybody goes, oh, well, he can't play the way we want to play. Yeah, of course he can, but it will take time. And David Nunes can't play up front in that number 9 role when things around him or behind him is not functioning because he simply hasn't been here long enough to understand how we play without the ball. He would never have been at a club where there's so much emphasis on what do we do when we don't have the ball. So how long will it take? I don't know. What is Jurgen Klopp's short-term plan with him? Is it just to go back to what we thought at the start of the season, slowly introduce the ball into the way we want to play? But you almost couldn't, could you? After the City performance and after Fulham second half, you couldn't slowly introduce him. You had to let him go. You felt you had to let him go. And let's see where you can take it. And now we've seen that. We've seen what happened when we let him go, isn't it? So now we've got to rein it back in and now we've got to reintroduce him into it. Maybe he spent a bit more time on the training ground with the work without the ball and also where we want him to be in situations to be productive for us, isn't it, Bob? I think it's a bit too early, isn't it? You know, but the problem is clickbait, Trevor. You know, these poor reporters had to write stories every 20 minutes for websites and whatever, isn't it? I mean, and sometimes you go, what can we come up with without losing? Well, it's easy to say that Darwin Nunes hasn't been a success because he probably hasn't. But he's only been here for 2 minutes, hasn't he? I mean, I'd have never been sitting here to you, Trevor, if they had to judge me after a month or 3 months or 6 months or even 12 months. You know, if I wasn't been given the time that they afforded me, there's no way I'd have been around in England to this very day, you know. So let's chill until there is clear proof that this boy can't play football. Let's take it easy until then.
100%. There's ample evidence in what we've seen so far that he could be really, really important and effective for us. And I suppose I'm curious as to what you make of, there seemed to be a tweak. Obviously, when you have Thiago and Fab, you can have that sort of pivot in the middle with the two. And then we saw Harvey Elliott in a more kind of central role, playing like a 10 off the front man Jota, and then Mo and Diaz either side. So essentially like a 4-2-3-1. And I kind of like it. I have to say, I thought it worked well. We created a lot of chances in that first half. I think if you add up all the chances overall, it was something like 23, 24 attempts that we had at goal. We did a lot of shooting right down the goalkeeper's throat. And he also made a few fantastic saves, to be fair to him. So we were carving out opportunities. It looked a lot more like us, and yet it wasn't the way that we traditionally line up. And obviously, if you're going to bring Nunez into it, and then, you know, we just made two changes to the front two and brought on Nunez and Bobby for Jota and Harvey. So it was kept the same shape. I'm wondering what you think of that, because even if we were to get used to it, you know where I'm going with this. We can't rely on it, because an injury to Fab or Thiago, we can't play that system because we don't have another player in that vein. So we'll have to go back to our three in the middle. So I suppose what my long-winded point is, like, how do we best accommodate this kid that we've bought up top? If we're going to look to introduce him in the side, is he going to be the focal point of the attack? Because I couldn't help but notice he did a lot of drifting to the left last night. What do you think about that? Like, do you see Jurgen Klopp being the kind of fella who adjusts everything to build around a new arrival? I'm not sure I do.
No, neither do I. I mean, Klopp has his own identity, you know, and that's reflected in the way that Mainz played, in the way Dortmund played, in the way that we play. So we ain't going to go away from that. Now, I've never played in the 4-2-3-1, but probably in football, it's my favourite system. But I do believe you can only play that system. You can't play that with a double pivot in terms of two number sixes, because it doesn't work. Manchester United have tried that for a number of years with two sixes in there. It doesn't work. You can play it with a six and a playmaker. But we do have a six and a playmaker. But we only have a playmaker when he's available. And then what you do is you put somebody ahead of him in a number 10, which can then link the play. So it goes a bit back to when I used to play at Liverpool. We played 4-4-1-1. We had that one guy in there who linked the play, whether that was Kenny, whether that was Peter Beardsley, and eventually Nigel Clough. And then that links the play into to Darwin Nunes. And I think that's what Klopp is thinking. That's the way we get the best from him, isn't it? You know, we play with the two in there, a six and a playmaker, a 10 in the hole. You saw that well, that Bobby came on and played that role. And that's how we link the play into Darwin Nunes, who instantly, the way that we attempt a forward pass, that's not meant for him. He's already spun and he's on his way, isn't it? So we got to recognise that. We don't ever take that away from a football player, Trevor. I work my nuts off as a football manager in the lower leagues to get people to run away from the ball. Run away from the ball, please. Open up the player. Because I had midfield players that could pass. So I'm asking them to, and they, what, no, no. And they always used to run towards the ball. And I'm going, please, please, please. So don't ever take that out of a footballer. A footballer who wants to run in behind to stretch the play is a gift for any team. We just have to learn to play with him, because we played for so many years with somebody who came towards the play, which was Bobby Firmino, and was better at linking play, not only central, but also by our wide men, isn't it? So I think that maybe is the way that we might be able to solve this.
I look forward to seeing the problem-solving process, to be honest with you. I mean, it's all... If we could just get consistent results, it could be a very enjoyable thing to watch evolve. A word then just for the defence, since we've looked at all the departments. It was encouraging to see Joel Matip and Virgil van Dijk looking so dominant, both in their defensive duties and also in their ability to win aerially on set pieces. Virgil just had the time of his life. He basically won everything, and then when it really mattered at the end, Joel, who'd had a couple of ciders, pops up with the one that we need. But I was very impressed with what they did defensively, and for the record, you'd have to say there were a couple of one-on-one situations where Trent, I thought, was very good defensively as well and immediately launched counter-attacks. But the revelation really of the foursome across the back was Kostas Tsimikas. Maybe it was because of the contrast where Andy Robbo has been quite underperforming, but I loved his performance last night, Jan. I thought it was fantastic. It was real gutsy, but he has enough class about him as well that when he's battling through something, he can come away with the ball in a very sort of elegant way and do something with it. And he did have a lot of end product as well in terms of what he was putting over crosses and forward passes and linking the play. And his defensive work was spot on as well. That's a massive bonus to us. And it leaves you thinking that it might be no harm for Kostas to get an extended run, because that will only have one effect on a winner like Andy Robertson, which is to up his game. What do you reckon?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I mean, Tsimikas' one is an amazing story, because some 6 or 7 years ago, he was playing in Denmark. And, you know, everybody, when they moved him on Esbjerg, everybody thought, well, he's never going to be good enough. And here he is playing in one of the best club sides in the world. He brings real quality. But I thought for all the defenders last night against Ajax, they did what the game required. None of them tried to force things. I think sometimes, because our two fullbacks have been so attack-minded over the years, they sometimes try and force situations that isn't there. And I thought last night, nobody really forced anything. Trent went forward when the game allowed it, but didn't go forward unnecessarily. And Tsimikas didn't do that either. So I thought in terms of that, they did well. And also, the two centre-halves, again, did what the game allowed and bringing the ball out from the back. As you said, they were a real pest at set piece. I was surprised that we didn't change that set piece a bit more, just to hang him up, you know, at the far post, and just to keep him alive for the centre half, just to head him back across or whatever. Isn't it? We wasted too many in for my liking. But when we hung him up, you know, we kept him in their box, and yeah, in the end, we got our rewards from the set piece.
Have you ever seen a goalkeeper who is quite as productive with his kicking as Alisson Becker? I mean, I go back to, again, the glory era where you were striding around the middle of the park for Liverpool, and obviously you guys had Brucey behind you. I think of fantastic keepers like Neville Southall, who were around at that time. Latter years then, the likes of David Seaman and all sorts of other fantastic goalkeepers across Europe. Manuel Neuer and Oliver Kahn, his predecessor, people like that. But whereas they're all fantastic goalkeepers and shot stoppers and sweeper keepers and all that type of thing, which Ali has all of those traits, we're so lucky to have him. His delivery is outrageous. And the reason I ask is I remember some story about Bruce Grobbelaar not being able to take the pitch or go to the field unless he had hit the light switch with the ball. And I presume he was kicking it from his hand. That's how the story was related to me. I think it was Ronnie Whelan was telling me this one. So I remember Bruce's kicking style was like most goalkeepers at the time, just to launch kind of bombs. You know, it was like they were lofted as high up in the air as possible to get maximum distance, kind of like an old-fashioned Gaelic football clearance. But the way Ali angles the ball, he's almost coming at it side on so he can direct it, that it's almost like a scissors kick. He's kicking through the ball to aim it like a really well hit volley pass with a nice bit of angle and dip and all the rest of it. It's a ridiculous skill. And I'm wondering, is that a newish thing in football? Do you remember a keeper who had delivery like that when you were playing?
No, not when I was playing. And I can tell you, poor old Bruce in those dressing rooms was a fucking nuisance with them light switches. Jesus Christ. I used to sit there thinking, I reckon I could do that in about three goes, you know. 30 minutes later, he's still at it. You know, you go, please, come, please. So it's a bit of a South American style. That Argentinian goalkeeper started with that kick, you know, he's doing, you know, like almost like a scissor kick through it, isn't it? But yeah. I mean, the first thing it requires is the ability to see this pass. Or if I can do this now, isn't it? It'll be beneficial, effective for us, isn't it? And I think that's where his real strength is, isn't it? He recognises those situations. Because often he has the ball where you hear the crowd going, "Whoa!" But he's weighing up thinking, no, the oppositions that are favourites. So he only does it when it's either a 50-50 race or we're favourites to win it, isn't it? But yeah, he does have incredible. So no, there was none of that in our day. I mean, we used to play against certain goalkeepers and they would say before we go out, because they would take all the goal kicks off the floor and they would say, this keeper can't kick. So you'd squeeze right up to the halfway line, you know, because he can't kick. And well, obviously everybody can kick out their hands. And as you rightly said, they just used to kick him up in the air, didn't they? It was like a bomb dropping from above, you know what I mean? But yeah, now it is remarkable. I mean, Trevor, next time you go and see what's a Premier League game, what's the three goalkeepers that every team has out on the pitch before warming up? And when two of them on the halfway line, either side, and the goalkeeper and the goal, and they're just pinging ball to each other, you know, it is remarkable. With 2 feet, you know, it must have took hours and hours and hours of practice to be able to get to that level.
And it's a real weapon in the arsenal of a team, you know, it really, really is. And when you've got people who are rapid on the flanks and have good control, like a Diaz, like Sadio Mane used to have, like Mo Salah does, it's a weapon. It's one that we have exploited really well. Just to finish up on last night's game then, it was a deserved win. I think we've both sort of said something along those lines. A massively important one. Because the reality now is football stops for the club for quite some time. And I wonder what your feelings are about whether that's a good or a bad thing, because I guess it would be probably net, it would be a good thing if Jurgen was able to work with his players. But obviously this is an international break, so he's not. And the Chelsea game is called off because of all the, funeral stuff going on. So I'm wondering, is it a good or a bad thing, Jan, that we have this break now? What's your thoughts on that?
I don't necessarily think it's a good thing. I assume with the game having been on a Tuesday, and most players due to go away on international level, they would have probably released most of them already and told them to go and have a couple of days with their family before they fly with international. My biggest concern is that when we come back, we play Brighton. And I always think that you need a bit of time to prepare for Brighton because of the way they play. So I can't sit here and go, this is a good thing. You will see miracles when football return. We'll be able to do A, B and C. We would have found our legs again. We would have found our energy, our aggression. I can't guarantee that. But we did say, when we did the last show, Trevor, that we thought that the couple of games, obviously the Wolves game was postponed, but also this Ajax game, we thought it would go like it did against Ajax, that it would be gritty, but that in the end, we would just about be able to get there. So I wouldn't be overly surprised if when we return against Brighton, that we might have to endure a bit more of that same sort of being gritty, being organised, just play to what the game requires, isn't it? But then, of course, pretty quickly after, we need to find some real form, don't we? You know, for the likes of Arsenal and Manchester City and whoever else is coming to play us, isn't it? But I really don't know. You know, as a player, and you're having a spell, and we've all had them spells, you go 2, 3, 4 games without winning, and only you know if you want to play again or if you want to rest, isn't it? You can't ever say it, but only you know. You know, sometimes you come home after the game, you've gone, when do we play again? We play Tuesday, and you go, fuck, that's the last thing I need. Because you know yourself, this is about to turn, is it? Or other times, you can have a bad game, and then you go, I want to play tomorrow, because I know that was a one-off. So I don't quite know where we're at this moment. And I don't think Klopp knows where he's at with the players either. Only the players individually will know how they feel and when they actually want to play again. People always assume that you want to play as quick as you can to right the wrongs. That is not the case, Trevor. Sometimes you sit at home where you lie in bed and you go, if I never have to play again, that would suit me right now. But of course, that's not an option, is it? But sometimes you do think that, and you go, whoa, I'm going to hide my boots, you know, put the Patricks away. You know what I mean? So it's never quite works like that.
Yeah, and for the record, I actually had a pair of Jan Mulby Patricks. I don't think I've ever told you that.
They were cheap, Trevor. Cheap. Nothing wrong with cheap boots.
Yeah, but yeah, good ones though. And I did the whole old fashioned thing that lads used to do back in the day, where you put them on, put them in a basin of water. You remember that thing? So the thoughts was that it would mold around your foot. I don't know if that was bollocks or not, but I did it anyway.
I think it was bollocks.
I think it was bollocks too. Yeah, it didn't really mold the way it was hoping. You mentioned Brighton being our next game. And of course, then you mentioned the fact that it's nice to be able to prepare for the way that Brighton play. But I guess maybe they'll play in a whole different way because obviously they've lost their gaffer, Graham Potter, who's gone to Chelsea. And I want to speak about Chelsea in a minute and what's going on there and Thomas Tuchel and all the rest. But we'll just leave Graham and Chelsea and Thomas and Todd Bowley there for 1 second, and we'll look back at Brighton. And I'm curious to see what you make of this, because I just have the Paddy Power website open here, right? I know you like a flutter, and there's a couple of candidates here. And the favorite for the job currently is a guy called Kjetil Knutsen, who is, I guess, a Norwegian lad. He did well at Bodo Glimt, brought the club into Europe. And he has also been pressed since. So he, I guess, is the favourite at the moment. Paddy Power referred to him as the hipster's choice. Another guy who is 12-1, Kjetil Knutsen is 3-1. 12-1 is Roberto De Zerbi. He is obviously doing his business in Serie A. He did very well with Sassuolo there. I think he got them to eighth a couple of times. And was also at Palermo at one stage as well. And Shakhtar Donetsk, I think, I read earlier on. Steve Cooper is the next candidate at 11-2. He's obviously with Nottingham Forest now, so I don't really understand how he could be that high on the list. Frank Hayes, who I honestly don't know. He's apparently in charge of French club Lens. He guided them into Ligue 1 in 2020 and got the job full time after that. And they're only just, I think, 2 points off PSG, it says here, at the top of the league. So that's pretty impressive. And then Bo Svensson is 6-1. He again is at Mainz at the moment, the Jurgen Klopp's old club and Thomas Tuchel's old club, and got them, I think, to eighth in the table at one point. And Brendan Rodgers then is at 22-1. I think we'll stop it there, because the current Celtic manager, Postecoglou, and the likes of Felice Matsu and other people like that. But we'll stop it here with Brendan Rodgers. The reason I'm mentioning Brendan and stopping there is at 20-1, that's a big shout. But things aren't looking too rosy for him where he is, and he might fancy a change. Whether that would be the kind of career move Brendan would want to make for Brendan's notions of himself is another thing. Of those names, what do you reckon? What's the most Brighton-y thing to do there?
The most Brighton-y thing to do is to get one of those relatively unknowns who's made a really good impression, that then they can further enhance their reputation. To take Graham Potter from Swansea, where he hadn't set the world alight at Swansea, but to take it because they'd seen things, they'd heard things, I thought was a really, really good spot. And I think that's what they're trying to do again. I mean, Tony Bloom, you know, is a really analytic guy, and he would be looking at all these things, where they go. I mean, all of them is a gamble, but so was Graham Potter. I mean, Graham Potter came from having managed for a number of years in Sweden, done really well, to go to Swansea and do okay. And then all of a sudden he's in the Premier League. So this will be a similar gamble, I feel. I have a feeling that they will stay sort of up towards the north. I think they're more likely to go for a Bo Svensson, who's a Dane, or Kjetil Knutsen, who is a Norwegian, instead of maybe going and picking somebody out of Italy. I think they're more likely to go for that different type. Or maybe even the French boy, to be fair, Lawrence, who's done really, really well. But it's one to keep an eye out for, isn't it? And then, of course, there's sort of a natural link with the boy who's the manager, Luton, Nathan Jones, who used to play for Brighton and whatever, and Steve Cooper, like you mentioned, who I guess will have a release clause at Nottingham Forest, isn't it? But I'm not convinced they're attractive to Brighton. I think he'd be one of those younger coaches that's done really well. The boy Knudsen at Bodo Glimt has been linked to a few jobs and not managed to nail one as of yet. They play some really exciting football. That is a high-energy team playing right up in the north of Norway. But whether they just think that step up, because don't forget I said before, Graham Potter, Sweden, but to Swansea, he did that step in between, didn't he? Bodo Glimt into the Premier League. Maybe that step is just too big. Maybe it's time for another Danish manager in the Premier League. Bo Svensson, maybe it's him. Maybe it's his turn.
Well, as you say, it's going to be a really interesting one, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens as a result of them arriving, if how the setup changes there. You would imagine that by the time we are playing them, they'll have whatever they have in situ, but I don't know, a new manager comes in and changes things too dramatically in his first game or two. I think he kind of has to go with a certain amount of status quo. So we can probably expect to see some sort of iteration of the Brighton that we've seen for a while, at least for the first couple of games. Now, you talk about making a step up. I read today a really strange little fact that apparently Graham Potter has never even been to see a Champions League game. And now here he is with Chelsea finding himself, leading a team out in this competition, a team who has won the bloody trophy very recently as well, under Thomas Tuchel. I think a lot of people have great curiosity as to what it is that Chelsea have seen in him. Some people, I think, struggled even to understand quite what the fuss was about Graham Potter and why on earth he might be a suitable candidate there at Chelsea. I'm really interested to hear your take on this. But before we go to Graham, maybe we should start with the man who got handed his walking papers. I saw a statement from Tuchel afterwards where there was no recrimination. I don't think there was any personal reasons for him wanting to go. It seems to have been a falling out that the club and himself just decided not to mention, probably as part of their agreement or severance package or whatever. It's a weird one because he seemed to be highly respected by fans and at least the majority of the playing staff. Maybe he had a few falling outs there, but I guess that's natural. It was a weird move, Jan. I'm wondering what you think is going on there, because I'm very interested in this character, Todd Bowley, who's making these wild suggestions. Did you hear the suggestion about the North versus South kind of Super League game one-off to based on something that they do in Major League Baseball? I heard it, and it's not to be dismissive, but it just sounded like it sounded quite out of touch and like kind of Yank razzmatazz in a way that just read the room, man. That's not what people want here. I put a lot on the table there. Just give me your take on Tuchel first, and then we can maybe move sideways to Bowley and what you make of him.
I mean, no denying that Thomas Tuchel came in and they had that run to win in the Champions League, and you watched them play, the way they were organised, the way they gave nothing away, you generally had that feeling that, wow, this team's never going to lose a game. They looked so strong, they were so well organised. Then he convinced himself that Romelu Lukaku would improve the team, and then everything is going to be backwards ever since then. And you can't deny that for quite a while they haven't played particularly well. They found it really difficult to get some kind of attacking structure into their play. Has he lost his dressing room? I really don't know. I would be amazed if he has, because he's quite a bright boy. There were some issues with his private life, but I'm not sure that's big enough. But I do think that this was a bigger picture thing. This was a kind of an American guy coming in and going, we're going to do all these things now. Now, if the guy's crazy enough to suggest all the things we've heard over the last 24 hours, you can only imagine what he's putting towards Thomas Tuchel. You have a football club, Trevor, and you have loads of different departments. Yeah. You have departments, you have the ticket department, you have the stadium tours and all sorts of departments. And then you have the football department. And the one department at a football club that's isolated on their own it's the football department, isn't it? That's kind of where you keep everybody away from and go, listen, no, we need our own space. We need our own piece to do our work. And I can imagine this guy coming in and going, you know, we need to be doing more of this. We need to be more open. We need to allow people, maybe even sponsors or fans into the trip, whatever. And you can imagine Thomas Tuchel going, no. And also this thing about Thomas Tuchel is very, very intelligent. And he's a great face of anything. But you have to remember that he has to do his own job before he can do anything else. And that's the one thing that worries me about Graham Potter. Is Graham Potter ready to go into Chelsea and become the face of Chelsea? Because I think that's what the manager is after. You know, he's after somebody's... Like, Jurgen Klopp is the face of Liverpool, isn't it? But Jurgen Klopp is just a freak of nature, isn't he? Because of his personality. And that was the one thing that Thomas Tuchel said, I'm not prepared to become part of this circus. And I think subsequently then, it's just one of those where the owner have gone, he's not for me. This guy is not who I want. You know, my dreams about this football club is these. And this guy, I'm not saying he can't bring him, but he won't. He's not prepared to compromise. So I worry a little bit about Graham Potter having to go in and becoming almost the face of Chelsea. I've been saying for years, champion, why doesn't somebody give Graham Potter a chance? Well, they have now. And because somebody have, I can also find reasons why I'm thinking, whew, it's hard to walk into a dressing room like Chelsea's as Graham Potter. Because dressing rooms are brutal, aren't they? Brutal they are. And they'll go, who's this guy? What's he ever done? What's he going to show us? What's he going to tell us? What's he going to teach us, isn't it? It's going to be a steep learning curve for them. And there's only one thing that will make that transition smooth, and that's winning football matches. You know, and that's the big challenge for him, isn't he? He has to win football matches.
Do you think from what you've seen of what he's done so far, his time at Brighton, which seems to have impressed so many people so much. And I don't profess to fully understanding the height of the praise that he's gotten, because perhaps I don't fully understand the amount of innovation he brought to the team or whatever. Perhaps I'm not close enough to the case. But on your own assessment of him, do you think he has enough about him? Dressing room aside, and that's a massive issue, you're right to flag that. It's huge. It's bloody huge, because if that doesn't work, nothing will work. But assuming there's a level of acceptance, do you think he actually has what it takes to operate at that higher echelon based on what you've seen so far?
I think it's a difficult question, Trevor, because it's almost impossible to walk into a dressing room and impress players by some of your ideas, because they've seen it all, haven't they? You know, every football club has everything. You can't go in and then introduce them to a new diet because everybody eats the same now, don't they? You can't introduce them to new training drills because they've seen it all, haven't they? So it almost becomes, as much as it's a group, it becomes an individual thing, isn't it? Where players will judge them on what do I think, where do I think my benefits are from this manager, isn't it? So has he got enough? He's finished, I think, 16th, 15th and 9th with Brighton. No cup runs to speak of. So it is a bit like, it's okay to lose games, isn't it? But he's not in that environment anymore, is he? He's not in that environment where it's okay to lose games. You know, he's not in that environment where you go, I think they found it really difficult to win at home. You know, can you imagine playing 6-7 home games at Stamford Bridge without winning? He's found it really difficult his team to score goals. But all them things are not acceptable anymore, are they? He has to win games home and away. He has to make sure that the team starts scoring goals. Playing good football is not enough. The only thing I will say, I think the praise for what the job he's done, I can live with that. I think the only way he gets too much praise is in the buying of the players, the recruitment. I think players, people are too busy crediting him with buying the players. And I know that's not a fact. He does not buy the players. You know, they have a whole analytical team in behind, and one of them is his guy that he's took with him to Chelsea, but also the owner, Tony Bloom, and the previous director of football, Dan Ashworth, has now gone to Newcastle, and now got Dave Weir, the former Scottish international, used to play for Everton, and now got him in that role, isn't it? So that's the one thing where I don't think he deserves the credit he's been given for the recruitment of the players. Beyond that, I think it's fair enough. And I think he was due this chance, but it's a big chance, isn't it? Because Chelsea, and I don't think Chelsea's about to change with this guy in terms of the moment we lose faith in the manager, we move him on. You know, there's no second chances at Chelsea. It's very much a sort of a winning machine, and they've always been prepared to make expensive decisions for the good of sporting success.
It's a fascinating one to watch, and I look forward to watching it with you. Just to finish up on the topic, I assume Thomas Tuchel will not be out of work for long. He's a guy who has a ridiculous CV at this point. I'm just wondering, has he also now at this point sort of painted himself a little bit into a corner as one of those guys who might be difficult? Because that can take hold, and it just might narrow down the opportunities available to you if you're cast in that category. There'll always be someone who will want to take him on board, but I wonder if those opportunities will be slightly limited now if he is developing this reputation as being partially difficult to work with. Now, look, we don't know what happened behind the scenes, and I heard stories that Todd Bowley and his mate went to him with a 4-4-3 formation.
Nothing wrong with that, Trevor. That might just give you an advantage.
So I can understand the lad getting disillusioned and whatever, but just a final word then on Tommy Tuchel. What do you reckon his prospects are now? Is he in any way damaged now by this, or does he walk away with a European Cup in the CV, so who cares?
I think the fact that Todd Bowley's decided to come out this week and say what he did completely puts Thomas Tuchel in the clear. He's only got to punch at that interview and go, listen, this is the guy I was dealing with. This is what I had to deal with. I'm better out of it. I do, however, think that super clubs, you know, and Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, PSG, where he's been, Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, I don't think they're looking for a Thomas Tuchel anymore. He might have a little bit of a step down at a real ambitious club. There's no doubt he's a good coach, and he will come again. I'm not sure he's going to get one of the big. I mean, he's just had two massive jobs, hasn't he, with PSG and Chelsea. And I also think probably he's thinking, do I need all this again? You know, when you can go and work. I mean, I thought when Leipzig sacked their manager last week, I thought, and Thomas had just been sacked at Chelsea, I thought there's a perfect opportunity for him. But they picked somebody before they could get him in it. But he'll be back. There's no doubt about that. And he'll do well again.
You know, we're going to have our sort of return to talking about other clubs and other things, because obviously we have this long layoff for Liverpool are not playing. So we'll be back to that situation where a good chunk of our show is looking around and discussing other options. I do very much enjoy that, because you know what that is an indicator of, Jan, that everything is going okay for us, because we don't feel we need to spend the full hour discussing what the hell has happened and why the wheels are coming off. So I do appreciate the fact that you are happy to go around all those different topics with me. So for another show, my friend, thanks very much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and to the subscribers, enjoy the break if that's possible. Watch a bit of international football, get an idea of who's going to win the World Cup. And then we'll be back in October for what's going to be a busy, busy 7 weeks.
Yeah, and we'll try and fit one in for you folks as well, where maybe you can get some questions to Jan too. So that might be a way of filling in the space and getting you some content as well and getting you some Jan interiors. So for another show, I want to thank Jan on behalf of the channel and myself, and we'll be back with you next week.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.